Hi, it's Jamie, Progressive number one, number two employee. Leave a message at the... Hey, Jamie, it's me, Jamie. This is your daily pep talk. I know it's been rough going ever since people found out about your a cappella group, Mad Harmony, but you will bounce back. I mean, you're the guy always helping people find coverage options with the Name Your Price tool. It should be you giving me the pep talk. Now get out there, hit that high note, and take Mad Harmony all the way to nationals this year! Sorry, it's pitchy.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You are Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast on the Houston Rockets. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day.
Everyone, to another new episode of Locked On Rockets, your home for daily podcast coverage of the Houston Rockets. I'm your host, Ben Dubose. Today's episode is brought to you courtesy of our friends and partners over at SeatGeek. Download their SeatGeek mobile app and use the promo code LORockets. You can get a $20 rebate today off of your first purchase from SeatGeek. So guys, as we chat on this Friday, we now know the Rockets' opponent. It's Rockets San Antonio. It's felt all year like it's building to that. Every Rockets San Antonio game has been legendary, gone right down to the wire, been there for the taking in the final minutes. These teams have been locked into the 2 and 3 spots all year long in the Western Conference. It's also somehow been 22 years since they played in the playoffs. That seems incredible with as many times as the Rockets have played the Mavs, and the Spurs also have played the Mavs a lot, but you've never had the Rockets-Spurs, the true I-10 rivalry since, well, the 1995 series when Hakeem Olajuwon pretty much eviscerated David Robinson to show who should have won the 1995 MVP award. And it was a great series for Houston, a lot of fun, and we have not done it since. 22 years is a long time, and well, you look all year long. All of these games have been great. You've had these two teams locked in the 2 and 3 spots all year. It felt inevitable, and with the Spurs closing out the Grizzlies in 6 games on Thursday night, that's what we're going to get. So as far as this episode, I'm going to break it down in 2 parts. First, we're going to talk about the current teams. Where my early thoughts are with this series. I'm not going to do a full X's and O's breakdown. That's going to come later this weekend. I'm going to do my usual pre-series podcast with Salman Ali, Forrest Walker, the good guys over at Red Nation Hoops. That's going to be to come later this weekend. So this is just going to be early takeaways, early thoughts, nothing too X's and O's heavy. But yeah, that's going to be the first half of the show. And then the second half, looking at one of my pet peeves, which is the history of Mike D'Antoni and Greg Popovich in the playoffs and why I think that's going to be overdone in the 3 days we have ahead today, Saturday, and Sunday before this series finally tips off on Monday. So first things first, the Rockets are back to work today. They're practicing midday at Toyota Center. They were completely off Wednesday and Thursday. That's 2 days of rest that the Spurs did not really get. Well, we'll see what the Spurs do. Maybe Popovich decides to give them 2 days of rest, but if he does, they won't have the same practice time that the Rockets do heading into this series. So either way you look at it, the Rockets have a little bit more preparation time than the Spurs because they were able to close it out in 5 rather than in 6. But it's nothing huge. If the Grizzlies had been able to push the Spurs to 7, which I think we all wanted to see, then it would have been a huge gap in terms of rest and preparation. And this, it's a slight gap, but the Rockets do get a little bit of an edge, and that's big because the main thing that you have to be prepared for with the Spurs, it's a very different style than the Thunder. It's much more of a team approach, and that's why it's good the Rockets can go to work practicing today, because a lot of the habits they used against the Thunder, I shouldn't say they're bad habits because they worked, but you can't against the Spurs. Against the Thunder, when you have non-options like Andre Robertson on the floor, we saw a lot of usage of players like James Harden as free safeties. They could help on Russell Westbrook. You can't do that against the Spurs where the ball movement is excellent. Almost everyone on the floor is capable of shooting. The flip side is that the Spurs do not have a player as transcendent as Russell Westbrook. As great as Kawhi Leonard is, he does not command that level of attention. So the Rockets can play a little more straight up defensively, but they're just going to have to be a lot more aware all the way around. Because whereas the Thunder, yeah, you can hedge, you can help, you can play free safety. You can't do that against the Spurs because everyone can shoot. The ball movement is exquisite. Greg Popovich is a fantastic coach. So you really can't take some of the gambles that you did against Oklahoma City. You're going to have to be a lot more disciplined. So I think that's going to be the first and foremost what they stress is you cannot take plays off. You've got to be committed for 24 seconds. The Spurs will not break down the way the Thunder did. They will not force shots. They will use all 24 seconds to eventually try and break you. And so the Rockets have got to be committed for 24 seconds at a time, especially when it comes to winning time in the fourth quarter. So that's the first thing that the Rockets are going to have to practice. The flip side, the offensive end, I think it actually matches up a little bit better for the Rockets in particular. Now, I know the Spurs are a really good defensive team, one of the better ones in the league, and certainly when you have Greg Popovich as a coach, that's what you would expect. However, the Thunder had, they posed a unique problem for the Rockets based on their overall team length combined with the rim protection of Steven Adams inside. Where I think this matchup works a lot better for the Rockets, I think it's going to be a much friendlier one for Clint Capela. Now, Capela did get going in Game 5 against the Thunder, thankfully. His 9 rebounds, 4 blocks in 22 minutes. That was a big step forward from the weekend games in Oklahoma City. But Steven Adams was a unique problem for him because he was physical enough to give him problems, but also athletic enough to go and make plays in space, chip him on the rolls, those types of things. The Spurs, yeah, you have 18 minutes a game that they typically throw Dwayne Dedmon out there, and Dedmon's a pretty good defensive player. But by and large, they throw more finesse bigs, Pau Gasol, David Lee, LaMarcus Aldridge, and those are the types that I think benefit Clint a lot more. The other benefit to that, because they don't really have a true rim protector, I don't think you'll see the Spurs defend the Rockets quite as aggressively up high as the Thunder did. Part of the subpar shooting for the Rockets, the 28% they shot from behind the arc in Oklahoma City, sure, some of it was that they just missed shots. But the other part, you give Oklahoma City credit, they forced the Rockets into a lot of tough shots. I don't think that's going to be the case against San Antonio. The reason the Thunder could take away a lot of those threes, they were not as concerned after game one with James Harden driving to the rim because they, once they made the adjustments and didn't just overly switch on everything, they trusted Steven Adams on that back line to protect the rim. So they were able to play a lot more aggressively out high. In this series, I don't think that's going to be the case when you have a David Lee, Pau Gasol, whoever it may be at the bucket. They're going to have to take not just James Harden, but Pat Beverly, Eric Gordon, seriously as creators, as penetrators. Also, Lou Williams off the bench. Can't forget him. 3 20-plus-point games against the Thunder. So him coming into the series hot, that means a lot. So you're going to have to take the Rockets seriously as creators because you don't have that elite rim protector back there. And so because of that, something's got to give. And what I think is going to happen is the Rockets are going to get more three-point shots than they did in the Oklahoma City series, more open three-point shots, they've just got to make them. The upside, the last game between these two teams in March, they did make a lot of threes. That's a good sign. I know the Rockets come into this series cold, but, well, if you want an upside from the rest standpoint, you're going 6 days between Game 5 of the Oklahoma City series and then when San Antonio starts. So it's really not going to be like one series flows into the next. It's almost going to feel like an entirely new season. So I think if there's any mental factor to them struggling from three, I think this long, prolonged break between series, that potentially can get them back to the style that we saw them play with throughout the regular season, and again, against the Spurs back in March when they were very successful from behind the three-point arc. Last thing I'll point out, the individual history between these two teams this year. The Spurs won 3 of 4, and I know that's a little bit of a tell. Now, the one thing I would point out, you can't draw too much from how these games went in the regular season, because when you look at the Rockets and Thunder, every game followed the same template in the regular season. The Rockets kind of dominated the first three quarters, and then the Thunder dominated the fourth quarter to make it close, and the template was completely flipped in the playoffs, where the Rockets got off to all these sluggish starts, but Houston won that series over Oklahoma City in 5 games because of how dominant they were in the fourth quarter, a complete reversal from the regular season. So these regular season matchups, they are one game out of 82. There are a lot of differences in the playoffs when both teams are completely 100% focused on scouting the other team. It's not just one game out of 82. You are fully committed to exploring how you match up with that opponent. And I know they do it to an extent in the regular season. You always watch film. You always try and match up. But there's such a grind that it's impossible to 100% focus on any one particular team the way you can in the playoffs. So yeah, it was a big difference, Rockets-Thunder the regular season versus the Rockets-Thunder template in the playoffs, and perhaps that same thing happens with the Spurs. I don't want to overemphasize the regular season because it is going to be different for both sides. However, as far as drawing some conclusions, we certainly are going to have the same players. We are going to have some clues as to how these two teams match up. regular season, the four games that the Rockets and Spurs played, the first two, I would say you almost throw out. And yes, I know the Rockets won one of those two games in San Antonio the first week of the year. Then the Spurs came back three nights later and won narrowly on a Saturday night in Houston. Both were close, and generally every game between these teams has been close, so that's to be expected. But the Spurs, early November, the first week and a half of the season, they're not fully committed. You guys know that. And the Rockets, that was the team that was off to a 6-5 start. There was no Pat Beverly. The Rockets were just trying to find themselves. That was back when the consensus expectation was for them to be roughly an 8 seed. So I don't think either team knew who they were at that point. Again, the Rockets did not have Pat Beverly, who at this point feels like their second most important player. I would say the latter two matchups, the one in late December and the one in March, those are when we knew these two teams, okay, these are the 2 and 3 seeds in the Western Conference. This is when they're locked in. And that's where I think you can draw a few more conclusions. The December game, 6 of 38 from three. That's the far and away leading factor. There was no Clint Capella. He was out with the broken fibula, but the Rockets played very well, actually led by 13 with about 5 minutes to go. But 6 of 38 from three, that was even worse than game 5 against the Thunder, and they were 6 of 37. That eventually caught up with them. Spurs won by 2 points, a Patty Mills 3 in the final minutes. The game in March, I think we all remember, that's fresh. The Rockets led by 6 midway through the fourth quarter, but Kawhi went nuts late. Also, the officiating, absolutely dreadful. The run started, Kawhi went to the line for 3 shots when Trevor Ariza literally didn't touch him. The foul at the end of the game when the Rockets were trailing, Harden went to the rim. David Lee clearly came down right across Harden's arm, which is why Kawhi Leonard was in position to make that block. Some terrible officiating. Kawhi Leonard played the game of his life. First game, the Rockets were 6 of 38, and all of those went right down to the wire and were there for the taking. That's why I said it's very early, but my initial read is Rockets in 6. I know they lost 3 of 4 during the regular season, but I just feel like there are more paths for the Rockets in this particular series. When I look at those games in the regular season, I see the Rockets not even doing what they do best and still being right there to win. So I just see the Rockets having more paths. I know the Spurs won 60-plus games, so the Rockets 55. But folks, the playoffs are a different animal, especially when you can focus exclusively on one opponent. The Spurs are always going to be a great great regular season team because they have a legendary head coach in Greg Popovich. We know they are essentially guaranteed to win 60-plus every year. That's just how it goes. But folks, look at the second round of the playoffs last year. They were in the same setting. The 3 seed won 55 games. That was Oklahoma City, led then by Kevin Durant and Russell Westbrook. The Spurs were the 2 seed, around 60 wins. Thunder 1-6, and really it wasn't even that close. The only reason it went to 6 was because the Spurs came out game 1 much more focused, won by 40 points. The final 5 games of the series, Oklahoma City won 4 of the 5, and several of them in blowout fashion. Game 6, the elimination game, wasn't even close. Now, I'm not saying that the Rockets are as talented as that Durant and Westbrook-led Oklahoma City team. Talent on that team was just through the roof. But what I am saying is that the regular season records, look, I think the Spurs overachieve a little bit. And that's not a knock against them. That's actually a credit to what Greg Popovich does, the incredible focus and discipline they play with. But I think the discipline they play with over 82 games gives them a little bit of an artificial edge in record because not everyone else is locked in for 82 games. That's just how it goes. In reality, I think the talent between these two teams is very comparable. I just think the Rockets, with this matchup, have a few more paths to win. And with how they've played in the fourth quarter against Oklahoma City, I like how the Rockets are going in with some continuity and confidence defensively and also playing well in the fourth quarter. Because, folks, you know all these games are going to come right down to the wire. It's just going to come down to who executes late. And based on what the Rockets did against Oklahoma City, I like their chances as far as executing in late-game situations. Now, that's what I think initially about the current matchup between these two teams and what's going to be a priority in the series. Again, I'll talk more about it, true X's and O's breakdown on Sunday with Salman Ali and Forrest Walker. I want to dive into the history of these two teams, and especially the coaches, Mike D'Antoni and Greg Popovich, in just a second. But for now, I want to pause and acknowledge our sponsors at SeatGeek, because, folks, they are going to be really relevant to you over the next week, because the Spurs and Rockets, it's the I-10 rivalry. We haven't seen this in 22 years. The two teams are separated by just about 180 miles or so. So there's going to be a lot of visiting fans for every game. Tickets are going to be at a premium. And if you want to get in, the secondary market is probably how you have to go, because the box office is going to sell out very quickly. And as far as secondary market sources, to me, SeatGeek is by far the best. They cross-compare all the websites. They grade every ticket from 1 to 100, so you know you're getting the best value. You're getting the best bang for your buck. And folks, the best perk of this is that for y'all, as listeners of me here at Locked On Rockets, you guys all get a $20 rebate off of your first SeatGeek purchase, and it's so easy. To get that, here's what you do. Download the SeatGeek app. Go to the settings tab and click add a promo code, then enter the promo code LORockets. From there, SeatGeek will send you $20 after you've made your first ticket purchase. That will come in the mail. So remember, download that SeatGeek app and enter the promo code LORockets today. Now, jumping back into the show, certainly the fan atmosphere is a big part of it. I hope that Rockets fans are able to travel to San Antonio for Monday and Wednesday's game one and game two. The upside, if you want to look at it, as a perk, the games in Houston are going to be on the weekend, game three and game four next Friday and Sunday. So the Rockets, if you're a fan going to those games, it's always more fun to go on the weekends, especially a late start, 8:30, which it seems like all but the Sunday game is going to be in this series because they stagger it with the Eastern Conference doubleheader. 8:30 games on work nights are not exactly very fun. So the Rockets get the fun games on the weekend. That's great. Should be a very festive atmosphere. The only problem with that is, well, it's easier for visiting fans to travel on weekend games, so there's a greater chance for Spurs fans in Houston on paper than there is for Houston fans in San Antonio. But you know what? Houston has a great fan base. This rivalry has not happened in 22 years, so it would not put it past me to have some fans make the trip even on a weeknight and go out there and represent the Rockets. I hope they do. And then as far as the weekend games, I said this on Twitter last night, I'm going to keep hammering it every podcast. If you are selling tickets, try and be aware of who you are selling to. Because, yeah, if it were me, I would absolutely take a little bit less money to try and keep the atmosphere as friendly for Houston as you can. So there are great sites out there. There's Twitter. But, yeah, if you're selling a ticket, try and be aware of who you're selling to. Because if you're a Rockets fan, I think selling those tickets to the Spurs fans is something you want to be aware of with the two weekend games. Because I think a lot of folks from San Antonio are going to be willing to drive to Houston for those. Anyway, that's enough of that rant. To get back to where I wanted to go with this second half of the podcast, the history. Folks, I woke up in a bad mood this morning because I turned on Twitter and the first tweet I saw from a national writer was Mike D'Antoni is 4-16 in his career against Greg Popovich in the playoffs. My God. And that just reminds me, you're going to hear a lot of that in the next few days. And it drives me nuts because all this stuff is circumstantial. First off, this is the 2017 Rockets against the 2017 Spurs. Those other rosters are largely inconsequential. Secondly, the thing that bothers me about playoff evaluations, we have this tendency, I feel like, in social media to try and turn everything into a case study. That, well, because something happens once, we're going to assume that it inevitably happens every subsequent time for the history of humanity until proven otherwise. And that's a fallacy, because, folks, this is a sport that plays 82 games for a reason. There's a lot of randomness. When you try and condense it down to 5, 6, 7 games, lots of crazy things can happen. Just like the Rockets in the first round against the Thunder. They shot 28% from behind the arc. If you were judging just on that, you'd say the Rockets aren't a great three-point shooting team. In reality, they're one of the better ones in NBA history. Crazy stuff happens in small sample sizes, even when you're talking about the same roster. So then when we're trying to compare different rosters and extrapolate that to what's going to happen in this series, that's going to drive me nuts, but that narrative is out there, so I want to address it head-on. I've said it before. First things first, when people think D'Antoni Ball and Popovich, they think back to those Suns playoff series in the mid-2000s. Several things come to mind with that. First off, the best series, the best chance that Phoenix had to win was 2007. They won a very meaningful, this was in the second round of the playoffs, but it was pretty clear that the winner of that series was going to be the favorite in the conference finals. Spurs did win and ultimately went on to win the NBA title that year. The Suns had won a very meaningful Game 4 in San Antonio to tie the series at 2, and two of the final three games were going to be in Phoenix. So they were in the driver's seat. What ended up happening in that game? Robert Horry, just a very dirty, flagrant hip check to Steve Nash in the final 30 seconds of Game 4 when it was all over, just sending a message, so to speak. Amari Stoudemire and Boris Diaw left the bench by a fraction. Didn't fight, didn't do anything, but that was been first few years after what happened in Detroit. The NBA was particularly concerned about players leaving the bench, that issue. They left, they were suspended. It actually looked like that Tim Duncan left the bench too by a small amount, because it's everybody's, no one's bad in this situation, it's everybody's instinct. You see an altercation involving one of your teammates, you want to help. It's not even about wanting to fight or something bad. It's there just about break it up, keep everyone safe, but the NBA had that rule, and they were particularly strong about that rule back then because it was so close in proximity to what happened in Detroit. And looked like Duncan left too. The Suns appealed it to the league, and what ended up happening by basically a fraction of a few feet, Amari Stoudemire and Boris Diaw went slightly further than Duncan. Stoudemire and Diaw were suspended. Duncan was not. The Spurs, with Stoudemire and Diaw out, were able to take the meaningful Game 5 in Phoenix and then wrapped it up in Game 6. That is just terrible, horrible luck, and sometimes it happens. Beyond that, I've said this many times, just because they're coached by Mike D'Antoni, the current Rockets team in the mid-2000s Suns had some important differences. The upside for the Rockets, Steve Nash could not score to the extent that James Harden does. Yeah, James Harden is running a similar offense, and he's able to get a lot of really great assists and get out and push the tempo and transition. But Steve Nash was never capable of scoring 30-plus points a night the way James Harden is. You would never see him drop 44 points in Oklahoma City like we just saw James do last weekend. James has abilities to take over games in different ways that Nash never could. Now, the flip side, those Suns teams had some athletes on that front line that the Rockets just do not have, specifically Sean Marion and Amari Stoudemire. At the 4 and 5 spots, they were lethal. And back then, before microfracture surgery, Amari Stoudemire was so unique. He had his defensive limitations, but offensively, his combination of athleticism and power was unmatched. If you met him with a more physical, traditional big, like Yao Ming or Shaquille O'Neal back then, he could just beat them with speed and run around them. If you tried to match his athleticism, he could overpower you. He was a beast, and having him as the primary role man, he was a matchup nightmare for the entire NBA. That's what those Suns teams led by D'Antoni thrived on. That was their bread and butter. It wasn't just Steve Nash. It was the matchup nightmare that pre-microfracture surgery Amari Stoudemire provided to the league. The one exception to that was the Spurs because of Tim Duncan. First things first, Tim Duncan's one of the greatest 10 players in the history of the NBA. Won 5 world titles. He's incredible, and as good defensively as he was offensively. But for that particular matchup, Duncan was the one big in the NBA who was strong enough to compete with Amari from a bulk standpoint, but he was also athletic enough and long enough to still cause him problems out in space athletically. It was just a tough matchup, and I don't think it's an indictment of Mike D'Antoni, because also those Spurs teams, 2005 and 2007, those were the most legendary Spurs-Suns series. Spurs went on to win the world championship. Again, they won 5 of them by Popovich and Tim Duncan. So let's not make it into some indictment that, well, Mike D'Antoni just couldn't beat those Spurs teams. No, those Spurs teams were good, period. Multiple of them won world championships. So no, this isn't just about Mike D'Antoni. This isn't a referendum of the coach of the two coaches. Those just happened to be really good Spurs teams who were really good, not just against the Spurs, not just against the Suns, but against the entire NBA. So to draw it as a conclusion of the two coaches, I think is really unfair. I think those are just two really great Spurs teams, and the Suns were really good. They just weren't quite to that level. And that doesn't mean that that's going to happen forever because, well, the Spurs teams now are very different. First off, there's no Tim Duncan. The types of guys the Spurs have protecting the rim, playing in space as their bigs, LaMarcus Aldridge, Pau Gasol, David Lee, they do not even compare to Tim Duncan in his prime. So it's a very different matchup from that standpoint. Secondly, the Spurs lost in the second round last year. They lost in the first round the year before that. The Spurs have not been to the Western Conference Finals since 2014, the last time they won an NBA title. So again, they're a good team. They won 60-plus games for a reason. But those 2005, those mid-2000s Spurs-Suns, it wasn't just the fact that the Spurs beat the Suns and they lost everyone else. They beat everyone. The Spurs were legitimately the best team in the NBA. So it wasn't just a referendum of how Popovich and D'Antoni match up. The Spurs were just the best team, period. I am not seeing evidence of that here. So I think there's a lot of reaches in these comparisons. The other thing, the 4 and 16. folks, you should throw out what happened in 2013. The 2013 first round, that includes a 4-0 sweep that the Spurs had on the Lakers. That was Spurs ended up winning the Western Conference that year. That was the Lakers team, a chemistry catastrophe. Dwight Howard, Kobe Bryant, we all know what happened there. And it was after what limited traction the Lakers got to get to the playoffs, to get an 8 seed, was by Kobe Bryant playing out of his mind. And then the last week of the year, Kobe's Achilles snapped. Steve Nash was already out, so you basically had Dwight Howard, Pau Gasol, and a bunch of D-League caliber guys against the 1-seed Spurs, who went on to win the Western Conference and push the Heat to 7 games in the NBA Finals. So I don't care who the damn coach was then, you were not competing with Greg Popovich. You could put Red Auerbach, Phil Jackson, any coach in the history of the NBA with that Laker roster, Dwight Howard, Pau Gasol, and pretty much trash. They were not going to compete in that series. So you can throw that out. 4-16, I mean, that's being incredibly disingenuous. It's 4-12, and really, 4-12, yeah, you just look at those Spurs-Suns teams. The Suns rosters were really good. The Spurs were just a little bit better. Now, you could make an argument if you really want. You can say, well, the Spurs won 60-plus games, the Rockets won 55. And if that's the case, maybe the Spurs are just a little bit better. I don't necessarily buy it because, as I said, the last couple of years, the regular season results have not translated to the playoffs for the Spurs. They exited in the second round last year, the first round 2 years ago. And so, to me, the Spurs are a team that wins in the regular season because of their superior discipline, and certainly that will pose problems from time to time in a playoff series. But to me, the playing field is a little more leveled in the playoffs with more time in between games, more focus on an individual opponent. I think some of those Spurs advantages that make them so lethal in the regular season are mitigated a bit. Not a lot. Not a lot. We're not talking about the Spurs suddenly becoming mediocre or any stretch, but enough to make the gap between, 61 games and 55 a little closer to parity. The other thing I'd point out, the Spurs don't come in here playing that well. I know a lot of folks tried to make the Spurs and Grizzlies into this heavyweight fight. Folks, the Grizzlies were 43-39 with a point differential of 0.5, and they positive 0.5. And the Spurs lost 2 games to them and almost lost a third last night. And that was to a Grizzlies team without Tony Allen. The Grizzlies are not good. I know a lot of NBA Twitter loves them because they play such a unique style. In an era that's all about pace and space, they're kind of a throwback, and so everybody loves them. They have a lot of wily veterans, and yeah, they do play gritty in some ways. They're fun to watch because they're a throwback. But they are not good. They are mediocre. There's a reason why, as I said, the Rockets, I think, would have loved to have played the Grizzlies the first round. And yet the Spurs lost 2 times, could have lost easily 3 last night. That was a very competitive game that could have gone any way in the fourth quarter. So, yes, the Spurs advanced, but I think you're seeing a lot of people make Spurs-Memphis into something it wasn't. That is an extremely flawed and very mediocre Memphis team, in my opinion. And the Grizzlies were right there, won 2 games, and very easily could have won a third and pushed it to San Antonio. Now, maybe the Spurs took them a little lightly. Maybe there's a little looking ahead to Houston. I don't know. But I don't think the Spurs are playing their best ball now. I do think it's encouraging. The Rockets beat the Thunder, a better team than the Grizzlies, in 5 games. And the Rockets did it all the while not even playing nearly at their best level. Because we know what the Rockets are capable of when they make their threes. So that's why my initial read in this is pretty positive. I don't buy the narratives on Mike D'Antoni and Greg Popovich's history. I don't buy the whole Spurs fear. My initial pick is Rockets in 6. I think it's a close series. But I like the way the Rockets generally play in the fourth quarter against Oklahoma City. And I think if they execute down the stretch in these close games, there's a good shot that they win and are at least in a position to close out the series in a home game 6. And what happens? Well, stay tuned. Anyway, that's just my initial read on it. Again, I'm going to go back and watch some of these games this weekend to see if what I remember matches the actual film. And then, of course, we'll have a more thorough X's and O's breakdown on, I think we're planning on doing it Sunday, the preview show. Series starts Monday, so Sunday I'll do the X's and O's breakdown with Salman Ali and Forrest Walker. But hopefully you guys enjoyed this. This was, now that we know the matchup, I figured y'all would enjoy a quick show with my early thoughts breakdown of, well, not just the current teams, how they fit, but also the history, Mike D'Antoni, Greg Popovich, what matters, what doesn't, and what to look for starting Monday night. Because my early read is going to be a great series. We've waited 22 years for this. It's a legendary rivalry, but I've got Rockets in 6. I think the Rockets match up pretty well with this Spurs team, and I think they've got a very reasonable chance to move on to the Western Conference Finals. So on that positive note, I will wrap up this off-day episode of Locked On Rockets. Well, it's not completely an off-day because, as I said earlier, the Rockets are returning to practice today. That started at about noon. So the Rockets have that going on this afternoon. Now they can fully prep for the Spurs. So we'll have a lot more this weekend talking about anything they say at practice. And then, of course, a little deeper film study on how these two teams are likely to match up. Once again, this is Locked On Rockets, your home for daily podcast coverage of the Houston Rockets. Follow us on Twitter at Locked On Rockets. I'm your host, Ben Dubose. You can follow me on Twitter at Ben Dubose. Also, email us, lockedonrockets@gmail.com. If you've got questions, suggestions, or inquiries about becoming a potential sponsor of this program, just as our friends at SeatGeek were today. Remember, download that SeatGeek app and enter the promo code LORockets, and you can get a $20 rebate off in the mail off of your first purchase from SeatGeek. And by the way, one more promo I want to throw out there. Locked On Rockets, we're part of the Locked On Podcast Network, which, of course, you can find across numerous platforms, iTunes, Audioboom, Stitcher, Google Play, TuneIn. Just search for Locked On Rockets or Locked On any NBA or NFL team. That includes the Houston Texans. There is a ton going on over on Kirby today. The Texans finally moved up and got a franchise quarterback. Deshaun Watson is coming to Houston. So my good buddy Robert Land, he was at NRG Stadium last night outside the war room. He got some exclusive audio of the Texans, the front office, the management, the fans. So if you want to hear more about the Texans, more about Deshaun Watson, he's going to have this initial press conference in Houston today. Check out Robert's show over at Locked On Texans. He's going to have all the Deshaun Watson info you could ever want. So again, that's Locked On Texans right here on this same Locked On Podcast Network. So folks, hopefully that and the Rockets practice gets you a good head start to your weekend, and go and get rested up, because starting Monday, boy, it's going to be lit. Rockets Spurs, first time in 22 years. Also starting Monday, the first Astros Rangers series of the year. It's going to be fun in the Twitter streets starting Monday. Hopefully it ends well for those of us in Houston. But regardless, it should be very entertaining. And of course, we'll have every game, every practice, everything covered for you right here on Locked On Rockets. So have a good weekend and stick with us, because we're going to have plenty Rockets Spurs talk to go in the days and weeks ahead.